It is Tuesday, October 18th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, Iraqi and Kurdish fighters make gains in a battle to seize Mosul from Islamic State. We'll get some analysis.
This is a very good development because the two sides have coordinated closely, and these are the two major forces that are going in.
The Democratic and Republican presidential candidates prepare for their final debate, and a member of the pop music group One Direction strikes out on his own. It's all ahead. Iraq's long-anticipated assault on the Islamic State-held city of Mosul is in a second day, with Iraqi Kurdish regional president Masoud Barzani saying 200 square kilometers have already been liberated. The bulk of some 30,000 fighters involve Iraqi security force members, Kurdish Peshmerga and Sunni tribal fighters confronting an estimated 4,000 to 8,000 IS militants to end more than 2 years of IS's occupation of Iraq's second largest city. Peter Cook is a U.S. defense spokesman.
This fight is taking place with Iraqis firmly in the lead, including thousands of Iraqi army personnel, counterterrorism forces, and federal police. Kurdish Peshmerga and Sunni tribal forces are also playing a critical role in this fight. Early indications are that Iraqi forces have met their objectives so far. This is going according to the Iraqi plan, but again, it's early, and the enemy gets a vote here. We will see whether ISIL stands and fights. We are confident, no matter what, however, that the Iraqis have the capabilities to get this job done, and we stand ready to support them along with the rest of the coalition. It is in our interest that they succeed, and we will do what we can to help them.
Coalition Commander Lieutenant General Stephen Townsend said the operation would likely continue for weeks, possibly longer. U.S. Defense Secretary Ashton Carter has called the offensive a decisive moment in the campaign to deliver the IS group a lasting defeat. U.S. Ambassador James Jeffrey, now a distinguished fellow at the Washington Institute for Near East Policy, tells International Edition's Victor Beatty cooperation between Iraqi forces and the Kurdish Peshmerga is nothing new. He said they fought together many times during the U.S. presence in Iraq in the last decade, and the Peshmerga comprised several brigades of the Iraqi army.
This is a very good development because the two sides have coordinated closely, and these are the two major forces that are going in. The rest are problematic because basically some of the Sunni militias and police, because they've been trained by the Turks, and the popular mobilization units, because some of them are beholden to Iran. But those aren't the primary actors in this fight.
Is there a concern that some Shia militia being used could pose a problem for the mostly Sunni population inside Mosul?
Everybody's concerned with that. We were concerned about that in the earlier battles to Crete, Fallujah, and Ramadi. The only time they really ran amok was in around Fallujah, basically before the city was liberated in some of the outlying towns. But that really did happen, and that has everybody worried it could happen again. But there seems to be a major effort to try to keep them away from the front. Unless the circumstances are special, they won't get U.S. air support or artillery support, and that's an important factor as well.
Americans, we're told, are playing an advisory or enabling role for the Iraqi forces.
That's true, but it's a massive role compared to what Obama was doing before, with a lot of American advisory teams on the front lines, these JTACs, Joint Terminal Attack Coordinators, basically forward observers. And then, of course, all of these people have escort detachments that basically get, you know, platoon-sized American forces with a lot of forward battalions up close to the fighting. And these guys will get involved. They'll certainly be shot at, and they'll probably return fire, calling airstrikes, calling artillery. That's their job.
The strategy, I understand, is to move in from the east. How do you see the strategy unfolding for final victory?
It's from the east with the Peshmerga and a little bit from the north, and from the south from this place called Kayara, which is a air base that you have most of the American forces based out of now. That's about 40 miles south of Mosul, and that's why much of the fighting now is taking place in the Nineveh Plain around Mosul. but they'll eventually fight their way through this band and get to the city. That's when the real fighting will begin.
Well, the commander of the coalition, U.S. Lieutenant General Stephen Townsend, said the operation to take the second largest city in Iraq could likely last weeks, possibly longer.
The Fallujah battle in a much smaller city with the U.S. in the lead in 2004 lasted with the cleanup about 3 weeks, and things were dicey for a good long time after then. And Mosul will take longer, I'm pretty sure.
Former U.S. Ambassador James Jeffries said it's possible a surge of new refugees will add to the 8 million displaced by the Syrian civil war and the Islamic State. Well, joining me here in the studio is Michael Lippin to give us the latest information about social media. So, Michael,
hi,
what's going on?
Well, the top trending item on Facebook today is Melania Trump. She is the wife of the Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump and a prospective first lady of the U.S. 330,000 people talking about her today. So she's in the spotlight because yesterday she gave her first media interviews since a 2005 videotape emerged showing her husband using lewd language to describe women while he was chatting with a TV host before a program. Now, many of his critics said he was bragging about sexually assaulting women, something he denied doing when he was asked about it at the last presidential debate. Now, 9 women have since gone public with claims that he did, in fact, touch them inappropriately over the past few decades. Donald Trump has apologized to the American people for the language he used in the tape, but he's also rejected the claims of his accusers as politically motivated lies. So with that background out of the way, Melania Trump, she spoke to CNN's Anderson Cooper and told him that she also was offended by her husband's remarks, but accepted his apology. She also said she believes he was encouraged to make the lewd comments, or egged on, by the host of the TV show Billy Bush. Now, many reactions on Facebook to that comment of Melania's were extremely dismissive and mocking, with critics basically saying that's a poor excuse for Donald Trump to say such remarks about women, basically blaming someone else, in this case, Billy Bush. One Facebook user, Santo Falsone, wrote this rather sarcastic note: "It's nice to know that a potential president of the U.S., Donald Trump, can be manipulated so easily by a tabloid journalist," meaning Billy Bush. Now, Melania does have some sympathy on Facebook, though. User Carrie Hasty Grant wrote this: "Seriously, why are we still talking about this? People are worried about something Donald said in a private conversation. I will wager that everyone's husband or brother or father at some time or another had similar conversations, and this is what all the liberals are worried about, rather than murder, corruption, lying, cheating, and the Islamic State. Shame on you." So that's just a sampling of the back and forth we have on Melania Trump today.
Okay, thank you very much, Michael. That is International Edition's Michael Lippin. Here are some of the top news stories trending. Iran sentences an Iranian-American and his elderly father to 10 years in prison. New report says law enforcement needs more training to win the war against human trafficking. The U.S. denies any role in severing the internet link of WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange, and Belgium charges 4 people with involvement in terrorism. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the voanews.com website and on our VOA mobile app. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
A 2015 report by the World Health Organization shows that between 30 to almost 60% of traffic accident deaths in South Africa, Canada, United States, Australia, and France can be blamed on drunk driving. While increased law enforcement and awareness of the dangers of alcohol-impaired driving has lowered fatality statistics, technology is also stepping in to keep drunk drivers off the road. A group of nanoengineers, electrical and computing engineers at the University of California, San Diego, have taken their combined know-how to develop a tiny tattoo-like device that provides an easy and quick way for drivers to monitor their alcohol intake. This new device detects alcohol levels in a person's perspiration and then sends the data to a cell phone or other monitoring station. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
The This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, we look at efforts to fight breast cancer. Democrat Hillary Clinton and Republican Donald Trump meet in Las Vegas, Nevada, Wednesday for the third and final presidential debate Wednesday. Trump continues to trail Clinton in public opinion polls, and this last debate might be his final opportunity to change the trajectory of the race with less than 3 weeks to go until Election Day. VOA national correspondent Jim Malone reports from Washington.
The final debate looms is crucial for Donald Trump, who trails Hillary Clinton by an average of 6 percentage points in recent national polls. Trump continues to warn supporters they are fighting the Clinton political machine and a biased news media.
This is a rigged system, folks, but we're not going to let it happen.
Even some Republicans have rejected Trump's claim. Trump has also lashed out at allegations from numerous women who have accused him of making improper sexual advances in the past.
These are lies being pushed by the media and the Clinton campaign to try and keep their grip on our country. They are all false. They're totally invented fiction. All 100% totally and completely fabricated.
Clinton has been immersed in debate prep in recent days. Despite continuing controversy over her emails, she's tried to keep her campaign focused on the issues.
Number one, we've got to get the economy working for everyone, not just those at the top. And we can do this.
Clinton is getting help on the campaign trail from President Barack Obama and First Lady Michelle Obama, who noted Trump's vulgar comments about women in a recently released videotape.
This was a powerful individual speaking freely and openly about sexually predatory behavior.
Trump has slipped in some polls in the wake of the salacious video and the allegations from several women, says analyst Tom DeFrank.
This is not the behavior that's going to endear him to college-educated white women. That's who he needs.
Trump and Clinton likely have different approaches to the final debate, says Republican strategist John Feary.
I think Hillary is going to play it safe because I think she believes she has the lead. I think Trump is going to go for broke because he believes that he's got to make ground and really kind of attack her.
In the final weeks of the campaign, both candidates will focus on a handful of so-called swing states where the election outcome will be decided. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
Well, in other news, it's Breast Cancer Awareness Month here in the United States. International Edition's Lori London talks with Karuna Jagger, executive director of the San Francisco-based organization Breast Cancer Action. Karuna Jagger speaks about her organization's latest campaign, Think Before You Pink.
You mentioned Breast Cancer Awareness Month. Here at Breast Cancer Action, we call it Breast Cancer Industry Month because of the overwhelming number of pink ribbon products flooding the market. And all too often, these pink promotions do more for corporations' bottom lines than they do for women's health. In 2002, we launched our Think Before You Pink campaign, calling for more accountability and transparency in breast cancer fundraising. And as part of that, we coined the term pinkwashing to refer to companies that claim to care about breast cancer, often by putting a pink ribbon on their products, but are not taking the necessary steps to ensure that their products or services are not contributing to increased risk of the disease, those environmental exposures that are really driving this epidemic. So each year, we call out a particular corporate campaign that we think is a particularly egregious pinkwasher. This year, we are targeting two of the nation's largest citrus companies. They have put pink ribbons on their produce while using oil wastewater from oil corporate leftover from oil production to irrigate their produce. So BC Citrus puts a pink ribbon on their Sweetheart Mandarin bags. And Wonderful Citrus, which are those are the producers of those popular Halo mandarins, they participate in a marketing promotion called Pink Ribbon Produce. Both of these companies are using pink ribbons to sell their products. They say they care about women with breast cancer. and yet they're failing to take a basic step to protect farm workers and the public from any potential health risks associated with using oil wastewater to irrigate their citrus. Wow. We call this pink washing.
So when we see different products that have pink ribbons, is it often just a pink ribbon that really isn't doing anything more than sort of drawing awareness?
Anybody can put a pink ribbon on anything, and they do. We see pink ribbon handguns, pink ribbon garbage trucks, pink ribbon, you know, anything, you name it. Sometimes companies are putting pink ribbons on products and are not making any donation to a breast cancer organization. Other times they may be making a donation, but often it's smaller than the consumer expects. For example, some popular credit card companies say they will donate, but they're donating one penny per purchase, no matter what the size of the purchase. So we at Breast Cancer Action always try to help people make informed decisions, whether it's about their breast cancer treatments or their screening options or about their pink ribbon purchases. And so we've created four questions to help people evaluate pink ribbon products. The first question is, does any money go to support a breast cancer organization? If so, how much and is it enough? The third question is there a cap on the donation? Because often you'll see a company say they will donate up to, say, $25,000, and you don't know if your purchase is going to be part of that donation or if the cap is already met and every penny from your purchase is going straight to the corporation. Our fourth question comes back to this question around pink washing. Does this product put you or someone you love at increased risk of breast cancer? And over the years, we have seen everything from perfume that contains hormone disruptors. Now, we know that breast cancer is a hormone-driven disease. And the country's largest breast cancer charity, Susan G. Komen, in 2011, put out a perfume called Promise Me that contained hormone disruptors and other chemicals of concern, urging women to buy this. We were very concerned that it may increase a woman's risk of breast cancer, and in some cases, hormone disruptors can actually interfere with the efficacy of the most common treatment, tamoxifen.
When we see things like, I don't know, the National Football League wearing pink, is that a good thing? Does that help in some way? Where do you stand on that?
The NFL has had a woman problem for many years because of domestic and sexual violence issues. They've also had a concussion issue. And several years ago, they distracted from that by taking up this crucial catch campaign to talk about breast cancer screening and how much they care about women's health. Unfortunately, their campaign relies on misleading health information. Like any company that's trying to sell a product, they need to sell a story, and they need to sell simple solutions. And get a mammogram is a simple, sounds like a simple solution. It sells products. Unfortunately, screening has not changed the death rate here in the United States. The value of screening is vastly overestimated, and each year tens of thousands of women are actually overdiagnosed and overtreated rather than having their life saved. It's a complicated issue, but it's a really important issue. Unfortunately, we have corporate marketers giving us bad public health information, and the NFL is a prime example of that.
That is Karuna Jagger. She's Executive Director of Breast Cancer Action. This is VOA.
Do you know the political process that determines who the next president of the United States will be? Tune in to VOA's extensive coverage of the campaigns, the voting, and the final tallying to find out how citizens choose their next president. Right here on VOA.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. That's Encounter every Saturday and Sunday on VOA.
This is International Edition. VOA's Border Crossings host Larry London joins me now to tell us about a new single by a member of a popular music group.
Well, Sarah, thanks for having me on the show. And today we're looking at one member of One Direction, a band that's been around since 2012 and formed on the very popular show X Factor on TV in the UK. And they are now on hiatus, at least that's what they're calling it, although all the members of the band are off doing solo things. Zayn Malik, who just goes by Zayn now, about 6-8 months ago, released a solo album. He was the first member of the band to go solo and release a solo album, which has done very well. Now, the second member of One Direction has actually released material. His name is Niall Horan, and he's just put out a song that he wrote and recorded called This Town. And I really like the song. I really like the sound. Niall is from Ireland. He's a very popular member of the band, well-liked by all of their fans, which are called One Directioners all around the world. So I think we should check out the new Niall Horan song.
Waking up to kiss you and nobody's there. The smell of your perfume still stuck in the air. It's hard.
Okay, well, if members of One Direction are now doing solo albums, does this mean the group might break up?
Ah, Sarah, you've asked the question of the hour. That's what all the fans want to know. Although, this past week, one of the guys in the band posted that a reunion is absolutely a possibility. Although when they first separated back in March, they said, this is only going to be a short-term thing. This is only going to be about a year. We need a breather. They just came off the road, just finished promoting their fifth album. And so we all believed and bought into that story. But then Harry Styles went off and filmed Dunkirk, signed a solo contract with Columbia Records, recorded three solo songs which have yet to be released, and the other guys in the band also working on solo material. Liam is at home taking care of his newborn son, Freddie, and Louis is working on solo material. So all the guys are doing stuff. They're involved in other things, and it's looking less and less likely that they will reunite, at least anytime soon. And this often happens, like NSYNC and all those bands that kind of go in different directions. They tend not to get back together when they've achieved success as solo artists. And Niall is on his way with his very first song now.
Okay, well, best of luck to him and to the other members of One Direction. Thanks very much, Larry. That is Larry London. He is the host of VOA's Border Crossings.
As if the whole world was watching, I'd still dance with you. Drive highways and byways.
And that is the music of Niall Horan. And that is our show for today. Please remember to visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us.
You still make me nervous when you walk in the room.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The rebalance to the Asia-Pacific region is a critical national commitment that focuses on regional prosperity and sharpening the U.S. military edge, Defense Secretary Ash Carter said on September 29th in San Diego, California. Asia-Pacific remains the single most consequential region for America's future, he said. The rebalance to the Asia-Pacific region, which President Barack Obama announced 5 years ago, includes diplomatic, economic, and military components, he explained. All of the components, Secretary Carter said, are to ensure the Asia-Pacific region remains a place where every nation can rise and prosper, even at a time of dramatic political, economic, and security change in the region. Secretary Carter highlighted security challenges in the region, including North Korea's nuclear saber-rattling that threatens allies and heightens tensions. Other challenges, he said, include maritime concerns that could hurt the region's prosperous future, as well as terrorism and transnational threats. The U.S. military, he noted, faced five major challenges: Russian aggression and coercion, China behaving aggressively, North Korean missile and nuclear provocations, Iranian aggression and malign influence in the Gulf, and defeating the Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant. The rebalance to the Asia-Pacific region has three parts, Secretary Carter explained. The first phase began 5 years ago, when the U.S. Department of Defense enhanced its military force posture in the region. The second phase launched last year, when the U.S. made qualitative improvements to its force posture. And the third phase will cement the progress made in the first and second phases, the secretary said. The United States will continue to invest and make high-tech improvements in its military assets to sharpen our military edge so we remain the most powerful military in the region and the security partner of choice, he added. Secretary Carter highlighted the strong ties the U.S. military has with its many allies in the region. America's regional partnerships are growing in number and strength, he said, noting that the effort entails helping to unlock the tremendous potential in the region. Secretary Carter concluded, "The rebalance is about the future."
It's time.